AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
Here are three reasons Zyn is America's number one nicotine pouch. We use food-grade ingredients. We have a wide selection of varieties, and they all come in two strengths. Find Zyn at a store near you.
Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Check it out now. No doubt now.
Thursday morning, January 12th, 2023. It is the Beating the Book podcast. Megapod was a day early because we have a tennis slam. And so we got to make room, and we have. Australian Open begins Monday in Australia in Melbourne, as they like to say, which is really Sunday night stateside here. Big time zone difference, of course. And we talk Australian Open. We talk all slams here on the Beating the Book podcast. And the gentleman who is with us each and every time, because he is just that kind with his time and insight, Drew Dinsick, Whale underscore Capper on Twitter. Whale Capper, co-host of the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with Andy Molitor, and NBC Sports Bet the Edge podcast. Drew, first of all, thank you for being here. That's the first thing. Let me just say that. The second thing is we have an empty chair that we leave for our sort of Emeritus Professor Dan Weston from Tennis Ratings. Dan is not feeling well. Dan has had, and I hope Dan doesn't mind me sort of saying this, I say this with such praise and tribute to him. He has been at the forefront of tennis handicapping for so many years, and Dan has had some health problems, and he's dealing with one now, and I just hope he can, he won't be able to do this podcast with us here today, but I hope that he will be able to do the French with us. How about that? So we wish him, if he wants to walk in the door midstream in this podcast, the chair is open for him. But I wanted to send him a shout. But thank you for being here as well, sir.
Oh, of course. This is a super fun time of year. Have to get all of your NFL wildcard weekend homework done early so that you can be prepared to break down the draw the minute it comes out.
No kidding.
That hit the screen last night, and away we go. Futures market starting to get shape. We saw quarters pop, prices pop overnight. I was really hopeful we would get quarter prices before we recorded the pod, because I feel like that's the way you really want to attack this tournament this year. So very, very excited to talk about this.
Quarters do exist at MGM outside of Nevada.
Really? They don't have them in Nevada?
They don't, dude.
What?
We have...
What is wrong with them?
Let me tell you how many books here have quarter prices. You ready for this?
Sure.
Zero!
Oh, no.
To be honest with you, Drew, I don't even know if they ever... I don't know if it will happen before the tournament starts. I don't. Like, that's how dark ages Nevada is. And by the way, let me say some offshores, right? You and I know this. There's some offshores of great repute. Like a bookmaker, they never put up quarters.
The bookmaker doesn't want your tennis.
They don't.
I don't know why.
They don't want your tennis.
I don't know why. They don't want my tennis, at least.
They don't want my tennis either.
Which is, it's fine. It's their choice. I didn't, I donked futures prices last year. Ultimately, I think that was a losing part of my portfolio for 2022, even though, one of the more memorable wins, Iga French was, was hugely big for me in June. I think still I gave a ton back in, the rest of them. So it was, I'm surprised there's not more because, really playing the quarters, playing the futures is, it's as much fun as betting match by match in a lot of sense. And it's tough to beat the match by match market. But if you kind of can construct the way that the draw is going to break for some of the players that you have eyes for, then, scooping like a 300-to-1 or 150-to-1, which I have a couple of those in my queue, is a fun way to go.
All right. Well, let's talk men's first. Novak Djokovic, obviously the favorite to win it all. He is in a short minus money. He is going for his 22nd slam, 22nd single slam, which would tie him with the great Rafa Nadal. But essentially the draw came out, and I want to get your initial reactions here before you talk about possible bets, which is, first of all, just some first round matchups. Nadal versus Draper, Tsitsipas versus Halas. For those who are more in the know, Lehechka against Koric is pretty interesting to me. Bottom half, Rublev versus Thiem, Dimitrov versus Karatsev, which is interesting because I think that was the, was it a quarter or a semi? I think it was a quarter in Australia
final,
a couple years ago where Dimitrov just basically quit in the middle of it. And then Berrettini versus Murray would be of interest to some in the first round. So a bunch of really interesting first round matchups. But in terms of the quarters, quarter one, Nadal and Medvedev both ended up in the first quarter, which obviously made Rafa's numbers go a little longer. We can do this. Well, I'll go through all of them, then you can sort of comment. Q2,
sure.
Tsitsipas, Sinner, Nori, Auger-Aliassime, they're all in that one. Q3 is the Djokovic quarter. He's got, round three, round four quarters. I'm just trying to make it interesting with Djokovic. But he has Holger Rune, Andre Rublev, and Nick Kyrgios back-to-back-to-back if he goes through this. And then quarter four, which I find the most interesting and perhaps the most bettable. Taylor Fritz, Sasha Zverev coming back. We haven't seen him play. And Matteo Berrettini. What were your thoughts on any of this?
I thought the draw was fairly balanced. Whoever got Djokovic in there, whoever ended up in Djokovic's quarter obviously was going to suffer price-wise because he is such a prohibitive favorite here. But I thought Q1, 2, and 3 are all fairly balanced. Q3 looks the most fun as far as just potential matchups down the stretch. Like the idea of getting a Holger, Vitas, Nodskov, Rune versus Kyrgios in the third round.
Yes.
Like that would be great. Like that would be a third round popcorn match. Rublev team is fun. I'm excited to see what kind of form team is in.
It's excellent. Excellent Rune forename knowledge, by the way. It's awesome.
Yeah. And Djokovic has some fun potential head to heads too.
Yeah.
A couple of good qualifiers ended up in quarter three. So quarter three should be good. And I agree with you 100%. I think quarter four is the most bettable.
Yeah.
And it looks the weakest.
Yes.
I am not a rude guy. Berrettini looks out of form to me. Zverev and Fritz, we did see Zverev. You said we haven't seen him.
Oh yeah.
We did see him. Fritz beat the ever loving bejesus out of him.
Yeah.
Like it was,
we
was
saw 6-1, very 6-4. Quickly. Yeah.
Yeah, it was 6-1, 6-4 in an hour. Fritz dispatched him in the United Cup. Might as well not bury the lead here, but my favorite bet of anything in the futures market right now is Fritz plus 275.
Bam.
Fourth quarter.
I got it right here.
I don't think that's fair price whatsoever. That looks like a palpable error to me. So,
I said that on I believe I said it on a numbers game this morning. I have it right here. Quarter four, Taylor Fritz plus 275. It's the bet.
Yeah, it's a good bet.
Yeah.
It's a good bet.
In what you would agree, because you characterized this on a numbers game the other day, and I understood what you meant, but maybe others didn't, which is like you are not looking forward to the men's Australian Open, which was your way, I guess, of saying, you'll tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, look, it's Djokovic's tournament to lose. Bets are going to be sparse.
Right. And yes. So even if you did catch a value bet, even if you did get a long shot who made a run, like ultimately you're going to lose to Djokovic at some stage. So so the idea of really kind of capturing something of major value, and I don't even think you need to go any further than just say, hey, you have a tournament with 128 players here,
right.
That, and the favorite is in, is in minus odds. Money. So, yeah. Like, is odds on. Like, yeah.
It's, we'll see that with Iga in the French Open.
We'll see what's and sometimes it's warranted. This time it's warranted. I guess I will kind of caveat that though. There have been kind of what's the right word? Just not fluff, but real reports that Djokovic is dealing with a hamstring injury. And you know, he is his own worst enemy, as anyone who remembers him being eliminated from the US Open for hitting a ball woman, in the throat. There are some extenuating circumstances that could make this a much more interesting tournament, open and wide up open. But the level that we've seen from Djokovic since he came back to the tour after the US Open last year, through the fall and winter, and then again, what we saw from him last week was a level that, you know, he can flip the switch and turn it on and, basically unbeatable on this surface. The Australian Open, for those who don't know, is the fastest hard court of the high profile, hard court tournaments. And I think, you know, it plays into his strength, not because he is an especially good service, but because he is the best returner that we've ever seen on hard court, in the sport of tennis. And you'll get, he'll have break opportunities on very, very good service games that, it defies logic. It frustrates opponents. And, there's just really no one that's been able to unlock, his skill set at this tournament through the years. The only exception is, for whatever reason, that one time he lost to Dennis Istomin, which is probably the most insane upset that's ever happened in tennis. Yeah. But Djokovic is the clear class of this field. He's in form right now. He had relatively low miles in 2022 because he didn't play a bunch of tournaments because of the vax stuff. And so for all those reasons, I think he's the rightful favorite. And I have a couple of other wild prices that I grabbed just for the hell of it. But, I'm not realistically expecting anyone else here to have a shot.
Well, let's hear what those wild ones are, just for giggles. You do that, I just want to get the story out. You were just talking about Djokovic and return of serve. You ever see that? This has nothing to do with anything. But do you ever see that Andre Agassi video where he's explaining how he solved Boris Becker's serve?
No, I should check that out, though. That sounds that's right up my alley.
It is.
Loved Agassi Becker.
Fantastic. I guess I brought it up, so can I spoil it for you? I don't know.
Yeah, of course.
But it's when Boris Becker came on the scene, for those who don't know, he had this serve that no one had ever seen. Like, no one could ever, what is this thing? How do we deal with this? And so Agassi just beat himself up. Like, how do I beat this guy with this kind of serve? And he watched, like, hours and hours and hours of Boris Becker video, and he saw that Boris Becker had a tell. That when he did his ball toss, if he was going down the tee, his tongue came out of his mouth in the middle.
What?
But if he was going outside, his tongue went to the side of his mouth. So the key, Agassi said the key, I'm getting chills telling this story. So Agassi's key, he was like, the key to this was I had to only bring it out. I couldn't let Becker know that I knew this. So I had to bring it out at only the most key moments in our matches. So that's how he solved it. And so after Boris Becker retired, Agassi finally told him, I was like, hey, Boris, you know how because I saw you had your tongue here and your tongue there based on where you were going. And Becker, he said, almost fell out of his chair. He goes, oh my God. He did this in a German accent, of course. Oh my God. I used to go home and tell my wife, it's like this guy's reading my mind. Such a great story.
Oh my God.
Such a great story.
Never heard that. That's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It speaks to two really important things, though, about tennis generally. It's a unique handicap because it is one-on-one, two individuals. It's a mental game. This is not a team sport. You really have, other than Tsitsipas, who gets help from his dad, I guess, you don't really have anyone, kind of giving you tips, guidance, you know, coaching when you're on the court. And so for those reasons, you know, it's a very cool, you know, just man on man, woman on woman, handicap. Yeah, the idea of looking at specific head-to-head results and finding something in the data where you're like, man, Agassi, his return, you know, he's winning return points against Becker in these high leverage moments. That's just impossibly good compared to everyone else.
It's got to regress,
you
right?
It's either going to regress or you tease that out of the data and you're like, all right, I'll take the games against, you know, kind of leads you to a bet.
But what I'm saying is your instinct normally would be, well, this can't last, right?
Normally. But you get enough of a signal and when you're at slam tennis and you have 4 or 5 hour matches, best of five, and you're in the later stages and it's guys who you have, you know, 10 head to heads that you can you can kind of comb through the data on different surfaces, speeds, conditions, temperatures, et cetera. You know, it makes for just a really fun puzzle to solve, which is why tennis betting is, you know, so unique.
Drew, that slams, Ben slams that are best of five works out better for you in your numbers?
Match by match betting, not really. The markets are unique because they are, you know, a lot of the smaller tournaments, you're just up against other sharp players. You're up against syndicates. Like I don't want to put it politely, but you know, there's not a lot of soft money in the pools for the smaller stuff. Or at least, you know, the intermediate stuff, I guess. There is soft money in the pools for, in my opinion, at least match pools for these slams, because people come out of the woodwork now like, oh, you know, slam tennis, I'm going to bet it. And, you know, and so there is a little bit of fluff there. But at the same time, like best of five, the quality comes through so often, right? That like, if you're, I'm usually looking for dog prices. That's just kind of my nature of the way I approach this. If there's a guy -350 and I make a -475, it's rare that I'm trying to capture that in just the money line pool. So, you know, for the most part, the dogs tend to die in best of five. That said, the Australian Open is a little unique early in the tournament. There are a lot of wild upsets just because, like, you know, we're coming off of a pretty long layoff. Like you said, we haven't seen Nick Kyrgios play tennis since Tokyo, where he withdrew, or, you know, walkover, what is that, October? You know, and Kyrgios he's a meaningful favorite right now. You look at the board, was he second choice in quarter three, probably? Yeah, he's plus 450 after Djokovic -280 in quarter three. Like, you don't really know what you're going to get with him, what kind of form he's in. He's a head case in Australia anyway, by the way. So you have some guys like that who you really don't know what to make of them until you see them play. And then you have other guys where it's clear that they have used the time off from end of last season to this season to really refine, improve aspects of their game. And whatever your last season's number was on, you know, that guy is wrong, right? And like Alcaraz is probably the best example from last year. Like if you came in with a number on Alcaraz, like, and you were betting into that by, you know, into the spring, like you were getting absolutely crushed.
Yeah.
And so some guys are going to come in and have new layers to their game, new tools, new approaches that, you know, are going to surprise people. So there is generally round one, round two, kind of a little bit of chaos in the best of five on the men's, but then after that, it tends to kind of
the cream rises.
The cream rises pretty aggressively, I feel like.
Novak Djokovic going for his 10th Australian Open
title.
What were some of the long shots? Then you just for giggles took a flyer.
So I backed Roberto Bautista Agut at 300-1. He's not a high ceiling guy in any way, shape, or form, but he's sort of like an Iron Man. He can handle the going the distance multiple rounds. And he found himself in Q4 in what I think is the softest section, just because I don't rate Berrettini high right at this moment. Rude.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just interject. So we talked about Fritz plus 275 in Q4. So you had no interest in Berrettini plus 550 in Q4.
No. In fact, I think I like Fritz outright price. I took the 25s and 22s that were out there when we saw the draw. I think it's like in the 18 range now or 20 range that you may be able to get 20-1 on Fritz, but my fare for Fritz is 16-1. So I took a little bit of Fritz in the 20s. Batista Agu is literally just like, he's a guy that's going to be in the later stages of this tournament just because he's an Ironman. And kind of going back to sort of the thesis of early in the season, like a lot of these guys aren't in shape. And so if you play a 4 or 5 hour match, like you're drawing dead next round. Batista Agu is not one of those guys. Like he's always in shape. Yeah. So, and honestly, it's like, it's a annual tradition in January. I bet RBA to win the Australia Open and then eventually eject, because like it's a soft angle, but it almost always comes through. That's the only like long shot that I especially like.
Okay.
I think Rune is an interesting case and an interesting price. I have him circled for the US Open this year, because I think for whatever reason, like his numbers on, on the slower hard courts are a little bit better. His performance last fall was extremely impressive. There is some seasonality to when guys tend to peak, just in terms of, how they're getting ready for a season and the surfaces, the travel, et cetera. So I don't know that Rune is a winter peaker. I think of him more as a fall guy. So I don't know that he has, realistic shot to get out of Q3 with Djokovic, but I would have made him second choice in that quarter. And some of that is, maybe a little bit of a holdover of how good he looked at the end of last year.
He looked spectacular.
So I think he was in the 40s, and that to me is value. I would have made him closer to 25. This pains me to say it.
Uh-oh, here it comes. I know what's coming.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
I think Scam Nori should be closer to favored for Q2.
Wow.
Played him at 6-1. And so I think we should clarify a couple things. So some of the Cam Nori hate that I was very
Tell people what you called him.
Scam Nori. Okay. It's tongue in cheek because it's fun play on his name. Yeah. But he won a tournament that he had no business winning in Indian Wells, where he beat no one.
I believe it was Basilashvili. Yes, is who.
Yes. Oh my God, I couldn't even remember. That's who we got. Yeah, that's who we got for his big win. It was over Nikolaj Basilashvili, the great Georgian of Georgia, the country, not the state, obviously.
That's right. Not Atlanta.
Right. So he wins Indian Wells. People like upgraded him massively in their ratings because of that run. And I just was like, that was fraudulent. He is not a top 10 guy. No way he should be rated there. And two things have happened since then. I think he has improved his game to a degree. And he's a little bit of an Iron Man too. He's a fitness guy. He's an endurance guy. He does do better in best of five than best of three. He does do better in a match that goes three sets instead of a match that's 2-0. Like, that's kind of how he wants to win, is just, he wants to outlast you. And so his prices, you know, market impression has come down pretty aggressively on Scam, at the same time as I do think his understanding in game and craft has improved. So we're kind of at the inflection point where I do see value on him to win Q2 at 6-1. Not a Tsitsipas guy, even though I know a lot of other people think he is. People think he's going to pop in this tournament. I'm not seeing it. Felix Auger-Aliassime has all the tools, but he still needs to prove it to me at this level.
Yeah, he is.
Guy.
For all the great matches he plays, the insert clunker kind of thing, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, maybe he had a breakthrough last year, right? Like, he was famously known for going to, I think, 8 or 9 consecutive finals and losing.
Yes.
At the tour level.
And
which
finally
is,
won. Yeah.
Which is like impossible. And he broke through last year. I think he took home five trophies last year, which is, I mean, that's a good season. He's well rated, but I don't know. I need to see him prove it at this level before I'm really willing to believe he's going to be, a deep into the second week guy. And for whatever reason, he's, you know, didn't look great his first time out this year. So I'm out on Felix at that price. I'm out on Sinner at that price. Sinner dealing with some injury. Sinner's an injury risk in general, even though his ceiling is much higher than a lot of the other guys we've talked about. And ultimately, I do think is sort of in the conversation with will win a slam one day, more than some of the other, kind of guys in his class. So I make it relatively even between those four, Tsitsipas, Sinner, Felix, and Nori, to win Q2.
Those are the four guys I mentioned for Q2.
Yeah. And Nori's at 6-1. The rest of the guys are in the twos and threes. So I think Nori's a bet at 6-1. And you're looking for him to outlast these guys 3-2, 3-2 in the later stages.
We see this remarkably similarly. I mean, Fritz plus 275 Q4 was what I had highlighted. I also did put the note of Berrettini plus 550, but I also am not as into that as I am as Fritz plus 275 of that quarter. But I mentioned Nadal, Medvedev, Q1. Those are the four guys I mentioned in Q2. Tsitsipas, Sinner, Nori, Auger-Aliassime, and in Q3, Djokovic, Rune, Kyrgios in there as well. I'm curious about and I'm with you on Cam Nori. Like, I think he's legit good at this point. Like, legit. About those first round matches that I highlighted, do any of those scare you for the favorite? So in other words, Tsitsipas, Halas. Halas gets you to it. Seems like a tiebreaker every set. Can't win them often. Didn't yesterday. By the way, I was on him against Brooksby. Lost both tiebreakers. Does that scare you for Tsitsipas? Does Draper scare you for Nadal at all?
We've gone a long way without talking about Mr. Nadal.
Yes, we have.
Rafa, your first question, Halley's, I think, is live against Tsitsipas. I think Tsitsipas early in these slams, nerves can definitely get the better of him. If he wins that round one match, he's probably going to the quarterfinals, where I like Cam against him. I like Felix against him. Sinner is going to give him a decent match if he's healthy. I wouldn't really write off Musetti either. Musetti's got a level that could threaten him as well. But Nadal Draper is probably one of Nadal's draw overall is a kind of a notable takeaway from yesterday. Mm-hmm. Nadal, if you don't already know, has kind of gone through his career with blessed in terms of draw. So many tournaments that I remember handicapping, just being like, how did Nadal get this draw?
I'll tell you why this is fascinating to me, because, and this is just a portent of things to come here in the second half of this, which we'll get to the women's here in a couple minutes. That's on a much more minimal scale of years. That's exactly how I feel about Iga, that she's gotten the best of every draw until this one, right?
She got
screwed in this draw, which, by the way, was finally, she was due. But Nadal, to your point.
Yeah, universal karma.
Absolutely. Yeah. Nadal, to your point, multiply that by, five times, right?
Yeah.
That's how it feels. until
now. So many times he's been just given a red carpet to get into the second week. And even then, no resistance until like the finals, semifinals. This is the opposite. Jack Draper is probably the one kind of up and comer you did not want to play right now.
You do not want to play him.
He's got the tools. He is in form. He's fit. Nadal, you can't say this. You can't say that he's in form at all. You can't say he's fit at all. He's dealing with numerous injuries. He has lacked any kind of the killer, level that you think of when you think of Nadal since his ab injury at Wimbledon. I don't remember seeing a single match he's played since then where I was like, oh, he's got something today. It's just, it hasn't been there. And I don't know if he was, he brings a different mentality to slam tennis. Obviously he cares about these more than, some of the intermediate fall events, surely. But
it feels, like Drew, sorry to interrupt. Last year when he came out, remember he didn't lose a match. When he started the season, I think he played in a prelim to the Australian Open, I believe, won that. Don't hold me to that, but I think that's how it happened. And then he won the Australian Open. Then remember he won the French, which was the match where he was down two sets and then he came all the way back. Which tournament was that?
Aussie Open Final. He was down two sets in a break.
Against Medvedev.
He was on death's door against Medvedev.
He came back. And then he won the French Open. And you're like, okay, this defies explanation. He's in the slam lead again. How is this happening? I feel like, and I have nothing to base this on, and God knows Rafa Nadal could prove me wrong, but I feel like that was the final flourish.
That was the swan song sort of deal. Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Cut to a shot of me at the French Open, and I'm like, there he goes again. Right?
He has dealt with so many injuries that are non-trivial that I've lost count.
Yeah.
If he ultimately comes through and does anything in this tournament, I will be shocked again. His run in the Aussie last year was pretty magical. That final against Medvedev was unfreaking believable. I lost my shirt in that one, so I don't remember it fondly, but I remember it. I just remember being like awake in the middle of the night, like, how is this even possible? Like, Medvedev had a break. He was up 40 love. What just happened here? And honestly, I think that plays into if Nadal does anything in this tournament, that's going to be one of the interesting week two stories, because Medvedev and Nadal are on a collision course for quarterfinal here. And honestly, if you want to talk a little bit about Medvedev in the same conversation,
please,
because Nadal's an injury question. We really don't know. I don't rate him highly in this tournament. And I agree with you that last year was probably like a, final hurrah. But Medvedev was a killer before that final meltdown last year. He was not afraid of the big three. He was, I'm just as good as these guys. I don't know. I'll go against Djokovic on his turf and beat him. I don't care. He had a mentality that was unique among the up and comers, right? Because usually the up and comers, a little starstruck, oh my God, I'm winning. I'm winning this match, and they lose a little bit of focus. Medvedev was never really like that. And he was coming off of his first slam win at the US Open last year. Djokovic gets, eliminated via customs and immigration.
Yeah.
Customs and immigration takes him out of the tournament.
Yeah.
It was like, wow, everything's broken for him to win a second slam. Like, this guy may be your, obvious future world number one for years to come. But Nadal kind of broke him mentally in that match, I think.
I think you might be right. Yeah.
He hasn't looked the same since. He hasn't had the same killer instinct since. I will even point to this year against Djokovic in the semifinals of Adelaide. He was in that match. He created some break opportunities. He couldn't find any quality in the high leverage moments, and he conceded his break way too easily. So it was kind of like, wow, this isn't the guy I remember from you know, from before the final last year. And you know, until he kind of exercises those demons, I don't know if you can really expect him to do anything.
And as I recall, that loss to Nadal in the Aussie Open on the heels of the previous slam, which you had called the way that you're talking about Rune now, maybe not in kind of glowing terms, right,
for the U.S.
Open at the end of the year. The year before that, in 2021, you called it. I'll give you a shout on this. I remember at the beginning of the year, you're like, Medvedev, U.S. Open. And that's exactly what happened. And he was at the top of his game at that point. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think where we are now with slams, that's if you have an up-and-comer who you think is going to make noise in a given year, you circle him for the U.S. Open and you bet him early.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of become the debutante men's tournament now.
Yeah.
Djokovic, we don't even know if he's going to play this year. If he is there, he doesn't like the heat. He doesn't really love, you know, the crowd doesn't love him like they love him in Australia.
Might be stopped, as you say, at customs, right? Like,
might be stopped at customs, right? Yeah. Might not even play. Yeah. So the idea of a breakout candidate emerging at the U.S. Open, like Alcaraz did last year, like Medvedev did the year before, I think Team did the year before that
team
too, right? That was the
that.
Team,
Dominic
Team Zverev in the final.
Yep.
That's the debutante. Now, you know, the debutante tournament now, as far as I could tell you. So, that's why I have Rune circled for that one. But yeah, Medvedev had Q1 is the toughest quarter. A lot of the guys that I was kind of excited to see where they landed here. Tiafoe plays tough, best of five tennis. He's kind of an Iron Man to a degree. At least he brings his best in the slams, much like his rating in best of five is a lot higher for me than his rating in best of three. Khachanov is a dangerous player. He looks like he's added a couple tools to his game this year.
He's my kryptonite, that dude. That dude is my...
Khachanov is tough, yeah.
He is my Irvin Santana. I used to say that when I bet baseball, that Irvin Santana was this, you know, relatively mediocre pitcher who, if I was on him, he was just the worst. And if I was against him, he was Cy Young. And that's how I feel about Karen Khachanov. Like, I just never get him right.
He had a wild upset at the U.S. Open, right? Can't remember who he beat now.
Cannot remember. He beat someone big, yeah.
He took out Kyrgios after Kyrgios came through. Yeah, Kyrgios, we were like all kind of excited to see Kyrgios finally reach a second, deep into a tournament after getting to the Wimby finals. And Khachanov beat him in five. That was a weird one. I don't have a good read on Khachanov at all, but it looks like he's kind of continuing to evolve his game positively. So he's going to be a tough out. Khachanov, Tiafoe in round three is going to be super fun. I think Draper probably beats Nadal.
Well, so that's exactly what I'm looking at right now. And Draper is, I was hoping it was going to be, right, like $2. Not quite. Plus 168 on Draper.
I was just
looking for that.
Shoot.
Yeah, that's exactly my reaction to it. Now, will I still probably bet it? Probably, but it's not as fun.
Yeah. I mean, Nadal's a creature of requires a little warm up, right?
Yeah.
Like his best tennis, or at least his adequate tennis comes after a nice warm-up tournament, which we haven't gotten from him.
Halas plus 388 against Tsitsipas, though.
That's a fun one too.
Yeah.
I'm gonna play both those guys in some way, shape, or form. The bottom half with Medvedev doesn't have exactly a clean path to the quarters either. I could see some chaos in quarter one.
All right.
I don't know what's your read on Marc-Andre Huisler?
Okay, so I bet him this past week. I think he is. His numbers are great.
My numbers are saying bet him here.
Yeah. His numbers are great. I bet him this past week. Who did he just lose to? I think it was it Hatch? I think it was Khachanov that he lost to.
Oh.
There you go. He's my kryptonite. But I think Marc-Andre Huisler is really good. He is only a minus 132 favorite against John Millman.
That seems insane to me.
That does too. John, there was a time where I would never bet against John Millman because he could just out-fitness you to a victory. Mm-hmm. I think that time has passed.
So Huisler had a nice fall.
He
won Sofia, where he beat Rune. He beat Rune and Musetti back to back after Yeah, he had a nice run. His final four wins in Sofia were all solid. Mm-hmm. He made it to, you know, he qualified in, you know, four matches in Paris. He played well in the United Cup and into Adelaide before losing to Khachanov. He's 150-1 to win the first quarter, which is not anywhere close to what I price him. I'm like in the 50-1 range for him there. So I'm going to bet some Häusler 150-1 just because I think he's live round two against Medvedev.
These guys who can hold serve and get you to a breaker.
Yeah.
Like they're just, yeah.
Solid. Yeah, he's currently ranked 55. He's a guy that's probably in the top 20 at the end of the year, as far as I can tell you, just based on the way he played last fall. Korda playing well right now. He added something to his game. He was the biggest threat to Djokovic in Adelaide 1. His path takes him pretty cleanly to a third-round matchup against either Häusler or Medvedev. Hurkacz is Shapovalov is So I think whoever comes out of the bottom half of that section probably goes through to the quarterfinals and maybe even wins the quarter. So, you know, huge, huge, high leverage head-to-head there between Medvedev and Häusler and then Medvedev and Korda. And then whoever comes through there ultimately runs through maybe even to the finals, could beat whoever comes out of Q2 for sure as well. So
I want to get to the ladies, but let me ask you about one more first-round match.
Sure.
Tanasi Kokkinakis, who obviously is Australian.
Sure.
Is taking on Fabio Fognini, which always makes me smile because it's like, for some reason, this dude can still perform from time to time. Mm-hmm. He's 3-1. Would you take a flyer on Fognini?
I don't think so.
I'd ask.
Yeah. It's complicated because I love that guy. So entertaining. It's been too long since I've seen anywhere close to top form from him.
He beat somebody the other day, though, that he shouldn't have beaten.
Did he? I kind of tuned him out, honestly. Kokkinakis is in Adelaide 2. He's probably going to win.
He's trying to go back-to-back, isn't he?
Yeah. He won it last year, right?
He won it last year.
Yeah. So last year he won Adelaide 2 right on the heading right into the Aussie and then lost to Yannick Hanfmann in the qualifier in round one in straight sets. So he obviously, you know, he's a guy that likes to celebrate a little bit. So if he wins Adelaide 2 again, he comes in a little bit of the flu coming into round one. He could lose to Fognini, surely. But
by the way, I was wrong. Fognini didn't beat anybody. He took the first set from Jensen Brooksby before he got slammed. Yeah.
Oh, yikes. 6-1, 6-3. I can't even remember. I mean, Fognini, when he's having a great day, he's so fun to watch. But it has been a really long time since we're probably talking pre-pandemic since he was anywhere close to top form.
Want to talk some ladies?
Still fun. Yeah, of course.
All right. Unless there was anything else we wanted to get out of the men's.
No, I think we covered all my sides. Cam 6-1 is fun. Yep. Fritz 275 best bet on the board, and then a couple long shots in Häusler to win Q1 at 150. RBA 300-1, where I'll ultimately I think we're going to see an RBA Fritz quarterfinal for Q4, which will be a ton of fun having both those in pocket.
Wow, that would be. I'm down with all those bets. RBA not so much, but all those like Häusler too. I'm all about it. Women's side. So I alluded to this earlier. So I believe it, and no one has been more in love with Iga, who's made more money on Iga than perhaps me. But I definitely concede she's gotten the best of draws until now. She is in Q1 alongside Danielle freaking Collins, Zhang Xin Wen, who's not playing her best, by the way. And Coco, who is playing her best. All of those and more in Q1. By the way, some interesting first-round matchups. Andreescu versus Buskova. Freaking Collins versus Anna Kolinskaya, who's put up great numbers. Lila Fernandez, Alizé Cornet in the bottom half. By the way, Iga has a very tricky first-round match against Julie Niemeyer.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just say this, because you were talking about the fast surfaces of the Australian Open in Melbourne. Tuesday, it's supposed to be 100 degrees. So after that, it's supposed to drop and be more normal mid-80s. But Tuesday is supposed to be 100 degrees. That will mean the fastest conditions of them all. I haven't looked at when Iga plays Niemeyer, but I will say this. If it's Tuesday, oh no. Because Eagle wants it to be as slow as possible. Eagle just wants to power you through on slower surfaces. The faster this gets, the more I get worried that Niemeyer could actually have a shot here. So I don't know if that's Tuesday or not. But quarter ones, Swiatek, freaking Collins, Zhang Xinwen, Coco Gauff. Q2, Jesse Pegula, who for those who missed it, just beat Iga at the World Cup, or the United Cup, pardon me. Petra Kvitova, who is sort of scaring me these days. Vika Azarenka and Maria Sakkari. I don't know how much I put in stock in either of them. Q3, Kasatkina, Kudermetova, Lila Fernandez, and Caroline Garcia. Q4, Arina Sabalenka playing the best tennis of her career, but she had the misfortune of also being in the same quarter as Belinda Bencic, who is a tough out. And then there's Anshabur, who is in that. She went to two slam finals last year. And then I want to throw in Ludmila Samsonova only for the reason that her numbers are great. But man, have I witnessed more mental breakdowns at key moments from anyone than her. I wouldn't know who it is. So she's in there as well. So I don't know how you view it. I look at 1 in 4, perhaps, as being the most difficult.
Yeah, Q1 is the quarter of death.
Yes.
There is no easy match at any stage other than Iga round 2, probably.
He gets one bingo card,
bingo
square.
One free pass in round 2. But you're right, Niemeyer is a tough draw round 1. Niemeyer is a good slam player. She's a good big stage player. She kind of fizzled down the stretch last year, but she's so young. I give her a pass considering she played deep. She played deep into Wimbledon and the U.S. Open last year. Mm-hmm. So she's a tough out. She has some high profile wins at slam level. So that one's spooky. Whoever comes out of the bottom half of her section is going to be a nightmare matchup. Rybakina, Danielle freaking Collins, both just.
I didn't mention Rybakina.
Nightmare to play either of those women in the fourth round. Bottom half of the Q1, I think you're drawing a tough matchup, kind of no matter who comes out of there. Gauff looks in form. Xinwen Zhang is in form. Badosa's in form. Badosa looked great last night against BHM.
So
one of those three women presumably comes through and is a really tough quarterfinal for Iga. So I think Q1, Q1 is the quarter of death.
Yep.
And if Iga, can she emerge? Of course, she's the best player. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be tough. Conditions are going to matter. This is not her best surface, surely. I don't know that it's going to take something like an injury or something seismic shift in like just the women's game for me to ever oppose Iga at the French Open. But Dazzy, I'm going to go against her for sure.
I got her at plus 225. Listen, the days of Iga being 7-1 and that kind of thing are over. The draw definitely makes her no better than plus 225. There's no value in that number, even though I had that hoping for a good draw.
She comes through the quarter, though. You're feeling pretty good. Kind of like the US Open.
So this is what I was going to say. If she ends up winning this tournament, mm-hmm. then she is a massive favorite to, you know, be one slam away because she'll be a massive favorite to win the French Open. She would be a massive favorite to be one slam away from an Iga slam at that point.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So she, then it would just be about Wimbledon. Can she win on grass? And that will be obviously a reckoning, but she's never won the Australian Open. And she got the worst of it. So she will, if she gets there, she will have earned it.
I agree.
Yeah.
Do you
like, let's go to quarter prices because we both agreed on Taylor Fritz.
Quarter overview.
Yeah.
Quarter one death. Quarter four, almost the quarter of death. I mean, that's a really tough one too. Mm-hmm. Q2 and Q3 are pudding soft.
I agree.
Man,
we see this correctly. Yeah.
Q2 to me is a fun one because I think somebody insane is going to win that one.
So who did I highlight? I highlighted Kvitova at plus 650. I know she lost last night.
I'm thinking bigger.
Oh, okay.
I think we go bigger.
We got.
So this is a weird, and we've never really talked about this, but it's going to be, I think, a big theme/story of 2023 in tennis, and that is that there are a dozen Czech teenagers who are all like, we don't know what the ceiling is. Right? Like, they could be the next Iga.
Give me some names. Give me some names.
Well, the two Fervitovas, surely.
Linda and Brenda.
And just from people who scout and know and follow, people think Brenda is better, albeit younger. And she came through qualifying, so she got here on merit, which is awesome.
In a Venus Serena kind of way, right? Where you're like, this girl can't possibly be better than her sister, right? I mean, she is.
That's the nature. Yeah, that's the, and you know, there's a lot of Venus Serena parallels because aren't they Muratoglu?
Maybe so.
Coached. Maybe I think so. I think there's like a weird amount of parallel there. But yeah, Brenda Fravitova, she's in Q2. She has Sasnovich round one and would get Pagula round two. Familiar with the conditions, definitely capable of going deep. Sarah Bjelic also qualified. She had the most impressive qualifying of any woman that I saw. She was a dog in the second and third rounds of qualifying and was clearly the better player. So the market is underpricing her to a degree. They're both in Q2. I took long shot prices on both of them to win Q2. And I think again, like, there's other ones too. Like, who's the gal? There was a gal that broke out in Adelaide who ultimately lost to Sabalenka in the final, Noskova.
Oh, Noskova and Masarova both. Is Masarova Czech?
Yeah.
So yeah, I bet on both of them at different times. Noskova and Masarova are really good.
Yes, they're very, very good. Now, Noskova didn't qualify because she came off that final and had to go right to qualifying, and she underperformed in round one. But the weird thing is that there's like a dozen of these gals.
Masarova, by the way, is not Czech.
Yeah. She's not?
No,
okay.
She's not.
She's Russian.
Masarova is Spanish, I want to say. Really
Spanish?
Yeah, of all things. Spanish and Swiss or something. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's basically a wave of young talent coming onto into the main draw. And, when it's men's tennis, there's no point in really making a big deal out of it because it's not,
Right.
Oh, great. A bunch of young talent. Like, cool. These guys are going to get absolutely mowed in best of five. Like they have no chance. In best of three, it's different. This is narrative-y, but I think there's a lot of examples you can point to, anecdotal stuff. Young players who have not played at this level before, if they get a couple of wins, like, the pressure doesn't really seem to impact them very much. We'll call this the Raducanu thesis.
So interesting that you're saying this.
So it's the best way I could put it is it's like they don't know they're not supposed to win.
Yes.
Right. And so they're just kind of out there just playing free. No pressure. No, like, this is going to define my career. Like, this is for all my, I need the sponsorship money. I'm not going to be able to travel. There's no external distractions. They're just playing, and they're playing at a high level, and they crush. And we will talk about in weeks deep into slams at all, maybe all four slams, different of these young women who were just like, no one's heard of her. Where did she come from? Only the super tennis hardos know who she is. And all of a sudden she's like six wins deep into a tournament.
Hardos.
And it's like,
I love when you say hardos.
Well, tennis hardos are, they're a breed to themselves.
But this point you made about Raducanu and the point about not knowing any better is such a good way of saying it. So again, that US Open run where Raducanu wins the whole thing as a quali.
Yeah.
Which has never happened before. She had the run in Wimbledon to the fourth round. Remember, Raducanu was a product of the pandemic, where in Britain, they just decided to have these makeshift tournaments and grant a wild card out of them. They wouldn't have done it otherwise. She ends up in Wimbledon. She gets to the fourth round of Wimbledon. Then she wins the whole damn U.S. Open. The Noskova point is interesting because it's exactly true. It's exactly what I kept thinking about watching Noskova more than Masarova. Noskova last week, she beat Jabeur. She beat Azarenka, and she lost to Sabalenka in straight sets, but she took her to a tiebreaker in one of those sets. And I remember thinking the exact same thing you were just saying there, which is this girl don't give a fuck about anything. Like, she is so, like, you expect her to just cave, and you're like, oh, no. She couldn't care less. So that's the amazing thing.
So she almost took out, she had a run at Adelaide.
Oh, yeah.
I'm bummed she's not in this tournament. She did. I feel like they should have maybe just, like, flash wildcarded her or something. Dude, I don't know if they can do that. But, like,
I think
she had a crazy run.
I think I bet Claire Liu against her before she beat Azarenka and Jabeur.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, well, my number said, because she beat Kasatkina. And I was like, well, that can't be right. Right. And so then I think I bet Clara Liu, and Clara Liu just got smoked.
6-2, 6-2 dominant from Noskova.
I was like, that was my worst bet of the year.
So this is all just a parallel to something like that could happen in Q2. I don't know if it's Brenda. I don't know if it's, I've already won a couple qualifying bets on, what was the other one? Bajel. I don't even know how to pronounce any of their names, by the way, which is sad, but we'll get there because we'll hear their names. But Bajelic, I won a couple of on her as a dog. She's playing really well. She gets Krejcikova.
She's a $4 dog against Krejcikova,
Is that fair? I don't know. Krejcikova, when was the last time she impressed you on a tennis court? It's been a while. So I don't know. I'm playing with house money with the Czech teenagers, but that's an underlying sort of story, because, you know, we're in a little bit of a transitioning time on the women's tour, right? Like the good namestays are getting, you know, are either moving on entirely from the sport or just aren't even, you know, like the Karolina Pliskova is just like, cannot even come close to rating them the way that you used to. So like, there is going to be some backfill with, you know, some of these up and coming players, certainly.
Yeah. I feel like it's the year where we either come out of it again, we're like, good God, Iga really is better than everybody, or at least this leveled out a little bit.
Yeah. And, or just like, realistically, we're probably saying Iga's still the very clear number one. And it's a tough discussion on who is number two.
Yeah.
And like right now it kind of is. I mean, I think everybody would consensus that it's Sabalenka, but
Pagula three,
maybe. I guess.
That's tough for you to get to still, huh?
Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, vindicated because I bet on Pagula so many times over the last couple of years that she's gotten the fact that she's a heiress to a billion, you know, multi-billion fortune, and she got to this place.
I'll give her a clear top eight, but three is a stretch for me.
Okay. Who would be three if not her? Like, I'm saying right now at this moment in time, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's a tough question.
Yeah.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This exact second, maybe Paul Badosa.
I was going to say Belinda Bencic. Yeah. So
Bencic, maybe.
Yeah.
Garcia. So again,
Caroline Garcia, maybe.
Some of our kind of thinking on this is a little shaded by what we have just seen in like the last 24 hours on the women's tour, which was a lot of chaos. But considering the draw came out, everybody was a little distracted. So I kind of want to just throw yesterday's results out the window. Other than Badosa BHM, which was a true blue match up and a good indicator of both women being in form and very, very, very close. I can make a case BHM is the third best right now.
Badosa and BHM.
You can make a case Ludmila Samsonova is the third best, even though she doesn't. She's got a little bit of a mental thing going.
She kills me. What was that match? I don't know what turn. Was it the U.S. Open? They all run into each other for me.
U.S. Open against Tomljanovic.
Where she had just 75 set points or something.
Disgusting. Just disgusting. And she did it again against Sabalenka last week.
The other day.
I was on a plane
during that match last year.
And I kept refreshing
my screen.
This can't be right.
I was like, this can't be right. I was losing my mind. All right, but which brings us to
her talent level and her numbers should tell you she's a top five player, I think.
And has been for a while. Has been for a while. It's not like a short amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
Q3.
Dominant in Cleveland last year. Dominant until she lost to Tomljanovic. Yeah.
Tomljanovic, that's who it was. Kasatkina, Kudermetova, Lila, Garcia. Is that, I mean, do you have a bet in that quarter?
Soft position for me on that one.
Yeah.
Looking for Annette Kontaveit to come through at 11-1.
Yeah. She's about a year removed from her best tennis.
Yeah. It's a weak enough quarter that I don't mind it at that price.
I think you're right. Yeah, I agree.
She looked okay in her first time out this week. So, yeah, this is very, very faint praise.
She's great. She's great. Q4 is the most fascinating because, right, it's like Q1. Yeah.
Do you have any long shots that you picked in Q3? Like, is there someone I'm missing here? Because, like, no one.
I still have this love for Layla's game where I feel like she can, at any point, she can be unbelievable. She's about 11. I wanted to say, what did I see her? 11-1 to win that quarter, something like that.
Mm.
If there was a long shot, she would be mine. But she's certainly not playing her best right now.
No.
Q4, I kind of wanted to take Bencic at 4-1.
So Q4, I don't mind the price on Sabalenka you're getting.
You would take the price on Arena.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Bencic playing well, and she's always been a fun. She's been criminally underpriced forever.
Forever. Sabalenka seems to have licked all of her serving problems.
Yeah, she seems to have fixed the serving problems. She's got the game that frustrates Bencic in general, right? Like, you know, I don't really have a good kind of analog for who Bencic is as a player, like what level. She's going to take care of business against this week, her weak opponents early, so you don't really worry about her getting to
Cam Nori.
The later stages.
Cam Nori is the best comparison I
can
make.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
Beats who he's supposed to beat.
Yeah, like she's not going to lose to a player like Georgie in round three. She's not going to lose to an up-and-comer, I don't think. But you put her up against the Sabalenka, particularly with power that Sabalenka brings to the game, and Bencic doesn't really have the shots to, like, hit. She's not going to, like, hit winners. She's going to need Sabalenka to mental meltdown in order to get through that one.
You know who I have not heard, Drew Dinsick mention yet?
Who?
Your 33-1 shot to win Wimbledon last year.
If she even makes it to week two, I'll be impressed.
Wow.
Her draw is
brutal. It's brutal.
Horrific. Yeah. Horrific. The other check for Vitova, Linda, who may be the lesser for Vitova, probably comes through her round one match, but then I think is going to be a bet against going up against the magical slam player, Kai Kanepi.
Kai Kanepi does well at the Aussie, doesn't she, if I recall correctly?
She does well at every slam, I feel like. Yeah. But plays well above her level at every slam.
You are pro Estonia between Kontaveit and Kanepi.
I know, I guess I am, yeah. But Kanepi for Vitova, like, market's going to be funny because Furvatova does have a absurd amount of market support just because people are excited to be on the next. You know, she's more heralded, at least publicly, than her sister.
I'm still tripping that you think Brenda is going to be better than Linda. Because
the casual says Linda because they know about her because her story is more well told.
Well, there's more numbers on her too, right?
And there are more numbers on her, but everybody that I've heard says Brenda's got the higher ceiling. Linda Fervitova is going to get a ton of market support against Kanepi. Probably you could probably get Kanepi at a dog price, and that's going to be one of my favorite bets of the week one. Jabeur Vondrousova is going to be a mess. Probably going to win.
Vondrousova's numbers are really good.
Really
good.
Yeah. She probably wins. If Jabeur gets by Vondrousova, can she beat Kanepi? Sure. Not going to love that spot for her. If she gets by Kanepi, is she going to beat Beatriz? Probably not. Or Ludmilla. Ludmilla Beatriz in third round is going to be a must watch. That's going to be great.
That's huge. By the way, for Ludmilla, those who are listening, BHM and Beatriz is the same person. That's Beatriz and Maya, like with Badosa, I've won tournaments, right? Won money betting them in tournaments.
So, awesome player.
That's an interesting point I should bring up. So in people talk about this who bet golf also. So there's a lot of these. If you bet tennis long enough, like we have, there's a lot of, there's Iga, right? And then there's this, like Badosa had her run, made money on her. Mm-hmm. Beatriz Haddad Maya. There's all kinds of players over time that have given you moments of money. Mm-hmm. Are you able to shake that emotionally? Are you able to just compartmentalize and be like, okay, whatever they did then is one thing. I'm just, whatever they're doing now.
In the back of your head, you know they have a level
that
you're expecting it could come at any time.
Because Drew, I still haven't forgotten about Andreescu's level, right?
Of course.
Right.
Same. Yeah. There was a tournament last year where Andreescu was in Iga's quarter, and it's like, can anyone beat Iga? I was like, I don't know, man. Just got to go Andreescu.
That's exactly what I said.
And then Andreescu loses round one. And they're like, oh, well, never mind. I guess she doesn't have to worry about that.
And just like that, too. I don't know, man. He's got to play Andreescu.
That's going to be tough. Yeah. I know. In the back of your head, you know they have a lot. Muguruza's in this category. She's in this quarter, and
I think she's getting beat in the first round.
She probably is, but she's shown you in her career a level that is that is rare. This is elite. I think if you've been paying attention when any of these women have gone on a heater, you know what they're capable of at their highest level. I think you have to just know it. And be prepared for it again if you see any indication that it's going to happen. I didn't bet any of the women in the section eight, the bottom half of Q4. It's way too tough. So many things could happen there. Gut would, like, if I was filling out a bracket, I'm probably putting Beatriz through. But I'm doing it very,
Beatriz through to the...
to the quarterfinal against Sabalenka.
Okay.
Sabalenka, though, I played a little bit of 225 for her to win Q4. It was, it's again kind of a nine numbers made it 170. So I took 225. I don't know. I think she's got it, but.
You know what's messed up about this? I'm thinking you were kind enough to do the Megapod and NFL Megapod yesterday, and I was, one of the questions I always ask is, what's the big favorite most likely to lose outright this week in the NFL?
Yeah.
There's three options, Cincinnati, Buffalo, and San Francisco. And I'm thinking about this on the women's side, like one of these big favorites, right? One of these big favorites is losing, and I hate to say it, but like Iga's on the short list, right? It's like Iga, by the way, I have Iga to win the tournament. I have Iga to win to win three slams. I have an Iga Djokovic parlay right here, the Australian Open. Mm-hmm. So I am, everyone who listens to this knows how much Iga has done for my life. But I worry about her here, especially if it's on the hot day. But the other one would be Krejcikova, right? Like Krejcikova could lose.
Yeah, she's on upset alert.
Yep.
Zachary's always on upset alert. We didn't even mention her.
Always.
She's a six seed in this one, and her mental game tends to crumble in slam setting.
No love for Coco. No real love for Coco. I mean, she's in Iga's quarter. That's the problem, right? She's in Iga's quarter.
Yeah, if that's your quarterfinal, I'm looking for Iga only.
Me too.
I mean, that's the funny thing. If a player like Zheng Shenwen had landed in Q2 or Q3, like,
oh,
that's my favorite bet of the tournament.
Me too.
Like, winning that quarter. Like, a player, even a player like Bernarda Pera, right? Like, she's shown you enough that I would have been like, oh, you know, she can win this quarter. Why not? Let's get her a long shot.
I bet against Pera last night with my favorite name on the tennis tour, Elisabetta Cocciaretto.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, she's won a couple.
That was
times.
A very well pronounced.
So I don't
that's
know
why
about
they pay
Pera.
You the big bucks, yeah.
But you're very large. But what you were saying right there is a great point. The way that the draw shook out, it probably muted the number of bets.
Yeah, it threw cold water on Coco, cold water on Jing, cold water on Collins, cold water on. I don't know if I was really ever going to bet Rybakina, but a little bit of cold water on her.
And it threw cold water on Jabeur and Bencic and Samsonova.
Yeah. The draw made it where I think the best, if you're going to play the futures market, there's no easy way to capitalize, right? Like, if again, kind of betting 101 philosophy sort of conversation sidebar here, you're only looking for a future price in tennis if you think the price is just absurdly wrong, or like you're betting into a part of the draw expecting that chaos can happen elsewhere. Right. So if you're taking a future price on someone that you have high confidence wins Q2 or Q3, and you're looking like you play them outright because you're like, man, Q1 is going to be, could be chaos. Whoever emerges from that is going to be gassed. Right. Like, beautiful opportunities if you had a player that you really loved in those quarters, but I don't see it.
It's the LeBron, Cleveland Cavaliers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like,
let the West each other. I'm getting to the finals.
Right. If you have a lopsided draw in any way, shape, or form, you make your play and then you hope that the other side is just chaos ensues because you have lots of other opportunities for upsets over there. And everyone that happens puts equity in your pool, independent of whatever your player is doing, as long as they're just taking care of business, you know? So didn't see a way to really capitalize in that sort of context in this bracket because the weak quarters were 2 and 3. I guess if I had to take a future at this point, I'm probably looking for best price on Sabalenka, but I'm betting that with low confidence.
Let's go, Iga. After all, I'm so worried about her in round one, but once she gets past that, I'll be okay. So I'm not holding you to this, and people, please understand that these are not Drew's picks. But if I just like this exercise. If I came to you after the Australian Open, I said, oh my God, Drew, neither Novak won or Iga. And it wasn't even like the next usual suspect. Like, give me the outlandish person in each on each side, men's and women's, where you're like, in the most remote things broke their way circumstances, this human being actually won this tournament. Not holding you to it.
Yeah. On the men's side, I think it's pretty straightforward. It's Taylor Fritz wins a slam and nobody saw it coming.
I see. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah. Yep. Somebody, either the hammy or something crazy happens. Djokovic doesn't win Q3. All of a sudden I'm thinking Fritz can win this tournament.
Yep.
I don't think Fritz beats Djokovic. I don't even know if he takes a set. He's probably loses 3-1. But realistically, like, he needs somebody else to help him get over the hump there. So Fritz on the men's side, women's side, I'll go with Pegula, because again, Q2 is pretty weak. If Q1 is just a bloodbath,
I was going to say Pegula or Garcia was going to be my choice.
Yeah. Those are the two. Those are the two you have to pick because they're the best players in an otherwise very weak part of the draw. If Q1 and Q4 turn into bloodbaths and so you have shocking, some shocking player emerges beaten and bruised, then all of a sudden Pegula gets a free pass to the final and you're feeling pretty good about it.
You made the call.
A little Bill's karma.
Bill's karma. That's right.
Yeah.
Buffalo, she's the heir to the Pegula. The Pegulas who outbid Donald Trump for the Buffalo Bills. She is the heir to that to that fortune. She's going to be the heiress. She's the heiress to a fortune. That's a wonderful thing to say. You said it at the top, though, Drew, and I will just say this. Six NFL games. after the fifth of which is when this tournament basically starts, like during the fifth on Sunday, stateside. So, like, this is, I'm just going to go ahead and say this, because we always talk about what's your favorite time of year? Oh, October, because it's the baseball playoffs, and it's, you know, the NFL's in full swing and college football. This little moment of January is pretty damn awesome.
Oh, yes.
And to get all these matches handicapped and to get your picks into, like, this is a sort of Herculean task over the next few days.
Yeah, Miami Dolphins right now, plus 588 to get a win on Sunday. There, I will, you can put it in blood. There will be a player longer than 588 who wins in round one of the Australian Open.
I was just about to say, like,
if Dolphins have no chance. Somebody longer than that will win.
Dolphins plus 588. Sarah Bajelic plus 426 against Barbora Krejcikova. Well, let me see if I find somebody like. Yeah, I mean, there's some players. Somebody's going to win.
I mean, somebody longer than that's going to win. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know who it's going to be, but
if you want a round one pick that I'm super high on,
please.
Laszlo Giri beat Casper Ruud.
Yes, he did.
He's not a good hardcore tennis player. Laszlo Giri.
He's not good at tennis. Somehow he won that match, though.
Somehow he is favored over the top qualifier in terms of rating to come through qualifying. Belgian kid. Named it's not on Bookmaker for some reason.
Yeah.
Zbergs is plus 200 ish worldwide market. Pinnacle got him 220. He was electric in qualifying. His path was kind of easy, but he's going to beat Giri round one. I think that's a fun one. Get him as a dog.
Anything else you like round one?
That's the only one that really stood out as I went through the pricing just now.
Okay. All right. Most coin flippy of all first round matches. Yoshihito Nishioka against Mikael Imer.
That one definitely is tough to call.
Total coin flip. Should be. Just perusing these. Brandon Nakashima against Mackenzie McDonald. And in my mind's eye, I picture the same person. Even though, obviously, when I see them on the court, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's Brandon Nakashima. That's Mackenzie McDonald. But Mackenzie McDonald is one of these players where, you know, typically he's not all that impressive, and then he'll just have a match where you're like, holy crap, this guy's awesome. Won a tournament in D.C., if I'm not mistaken, Mackenzie McDonald a couple years ago. So a lot of interesting matches. But again, Draper-Nadal probably being the single most of all of them. And I'm with you. I like Marc-Andre Hessler. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I think I'll be betting Hessler against Millman.
Yeah, maybe I'm overcorrected for what was a hot run from him last fall, but I like him for sure.
How do we get back on the men's? We got back on the men's. Women's side.
No, I don't know. Yeah, no. Asked a good question, which is like, what's the coin flippiest?
Oh, by the way, this one, Andreescu and Buskova. Buskova's numbers are outstanding.
Yeah.
And she's plus 117. I mean, I don't know.
I don't think that doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah,
the coin flippiest match I have on the men's 50.1 to 49.9. Davidovich Fokina versus Bublik.
Oh, yeah.
I give Davidovich Fokina the very, 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 very slimmest
good luck
of edges.
Predicting that match. Yeah.
Very, very, very slim.
That is the coin flippiest. That is absolutely the coin flippiest. Yeah. Women's side, what was your coin flippiest?
I don't know. Let me pull up my numbers real quick here. I like that Buskova moneyline look regardless. She's got the goods to play well at slam level.
Full disclosure, I have not bet that yet, but just on a scan of the eyes, that looks to me, I'm like, wait a minute, how she's a plus 117?
Yeah, at first glance, I have a very close match between Kirstea and Putintseva. That one's almost 50-50.
Kirstea and Putintseva. Yeah, I could see that.
Very close between Golubic and Martic.
But like Potapova and Sloane Stephens. Like, I have no idea what to expect from Sloane Stephens from match to match. Yeah.
Oh, whoa. Why is Anna Samova favored? She looked like she picked up a meaningful injury in her last time.
Yes, she did. And she was playing. It was against Haddad Maia, right?
That doesn't look right.
Let me see that. Where is that? Anisimova?
Yeah, Kostyuk Anisimova.
Oh,
that
Marta,
doesn't look like
Marta
that. Looks like a wrong. That looks like a wrong line.
Yeah, because she. It's. I mean, it's basically a coin flip on the market. But it's.
Yeah,
Anisimova was playing great, and then she had a really strange performance where all the announcers did was talk about how odd she looked out there.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that. I didn't think. Yeah. I was basically like, oh boy, she better hope for a soft draw to get in shape in week one because she's not in shape now. Kostyuk's going to beat her, I think. That's going to close like in the 150 range, I think.
God, I'm going to bet so many of these matches.
It was fun. Yeah.
All right, man.
Yeah.
Drew, you're the best.
All right, man.
There's
good luck.
Literally,
hope people enjoy this.
With the exception of Dan Weston, who again I want to say, hope Dan Weston gets better.
Best of health. Yes. Of course.
Besides Dan, Drew, you know, they're just the two of you guys, who I'd always want to do these with. And so I thank you again, and we'll talk to you before the French. If not, there is a fifth major in there at Indian Wells. Maybe we'll get around to doing that one, too.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun. All right. Do you attend Indian Wells matches, by the way?
I've never been. I've been to Indian Wells many times, but not to the actual tournament.
You never had the desire to go?
It's right around March Madness, and I usually have a trip out to Vegas for March Madness.
Yeah,
so
okay,
that's why. Well, it's tough. It's ski season too. That's there are three things all at the same time. Like Mammoth, best conditions
and
in Mammoth.
It's ski season. Yeah,
I know. Best conditions in Mammoth. Good time. Everybody that you want to see in network is in Vegas and also Indian Wells.
You a skier or a snowboarder?
Ski. Yeah, downhill skier. Not that I have anything against snowboarding. I just never learned.
Old school. Drew, thank you. Enjoy the Australian Open. I'm sure we'll be texting at some point during. But good luck with all your bets. Appreciate the time, man.
All right, best of luck.
Drew Dinsick at @whale_capper. Again, the podcasts from Drew Deep Dive with Andy Molitor and NBC Sports Bet the Edge. But again, follow him on Twitter @whale_capper. Good luck with all your Australian Open bets. Futures, matches, from all of us here on the podcast. Thanks for listening.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.